dead! All Imperial records agree.
Maya Tamia remained unmoved.
I saw him, Senator. I saw him and heard him.
Lies!
Duxono cut him off.
All lies created to distract us from the search for justice.
Seated in the small room behind the false wall, Booster Tarek shook his head.
Idiots,
he muttered.
Both of them.
Now, father.
His daughter, Mirax Tarek Horn, said, squeezing his arm.
Both of them are probably sincere, from their own different points of view.
And we all know what road is lined with sincere people,
Tarek said sourly, glancing back over his shoulder.
Where is that blasted Bell Iblis anyway? I've got work to do.
You've got nothing but overhaul and maintenance work on the Errant Venture scheduled for the next 3 weeks,
Mirax admonished him firmly.
And you're not needed for a single bit of it.
Booster sent a glare at her, a glare that worked about as well as such looks had ever worked on her, which was to say not very.
I thought daughters were supposed to be a source of pride and comfort to their fathers in their old age,
he grumbled. She smiled.
When you get there, I'll see what I can do, she promised.
The smile faded as she turned back to the false wall.
This whole thing is starting to get out of hand. Have you heard that 100 systems have already petitioned to rejoin the Empire?
My sources say it's only been 20 systems,
Booster said.
Everything else is just rumors.
Whatever the numbers, it's still something to worry about, Mirax said, a note of quiet dread in her voice. If Thrawn is really still alive, and if all this turmoil persuades people they want or need his protection, then the Empire could regain its territory without firing a single shot.
I doubt they're going to talk that many systems into coming back,
Booster argued,
but he didn't feel nearly as confident as he was trying to sound.
Anyway, there's not a lot we can do about it.
Behind him, the door slid open.
Ah, Captain Tarek,
General Bell Iblis said, striding in and offering his hand.
Thank you for coming. I trust you've been well entertained. If you mean the dance show, I've seen better,
Booster said, jerking a thumb toward the loud drama in the next room as he reluctantly and briefly gripped Bell Iblis's hand. He and authority had never gotten along very well.
Speaking of dance shows, I've got a bone to pick with you over that nonsense in the Sifkrik system 3 weeks ago. The bureaucrats there still haven't released the Hoopster's prank back to me.
I didn't know that,
Bell Iblis said, shutting off the speaker that was bringing the argument in from the next room and pulling over the room's remaining chair.
I'll give orders to have it sprung as soon as we finish here.
Booster eyed him warily.
The word finish implies a start.
Indeed it does,
Bell Iblis agreed, positioning the chair to face the two of them and sitting down.
I didn't ask you here just for a private showing of Gaverson's mediation skill. Incidentally, I presume I don't have to tell you that anything you heard here is to be considered confidential.
Really?
Booster frowned thoughtfully at his daughter.
Let's see. The Aishori scream when they debate and want a square meter of skin off every Bothan to give to what's left of the Karmasi. The Diamala want the same square meter, but only from the Bothans who helped destroy Karmas, exhuming them, if necessary, as soon as anyone figures out who they were. Who do you think we should sell these big secrets to first, Mirax?
She gave her father a patient look and shifted her attention to Bell Iblis.
We understand, General, she said. What is it you want?
I'll let you see a bit of this private conversation because I thought it would help drive home the seriousness of the situation we're in,
Bell Iblis said, nodding back toward the discussion still going on now inaudibly behind them.
A buildup of warships over Bothawe is being repeated all over the New Republic, as worlds and species line up behind the Aishori and Diamala over this issue. The only way we're going to defuse the situation is to find out who exactly the Bothans were who sabotaged the Kaamas planetary shields.
As a dancer, General, you know better than they are,
Booster said.
Get to the point.
Bel Iblis locked eyes with him.
I want to borrow the errant venture.
Booster stared at him, too stunned even to laugh in the General's face.
You must be joking,
he got out at last.
Certainly not.
What do you need it for?
Mirax asked. Bel Iblis shifted his gaze to her.
We think there may be a complete copy of the Kaamas document in the Ubiquitate base at Yaga Minor,
he told her.
Gaversum has decided to launch an information raid to try to get hold of it.
A data raid? On a Ubiquitate base?
Booster echoed.
What poor sucker pulled that assignment?
Bel Iblis regarded him coolly.
I did,
he said. For a moment, the room was silent. Booster studied Bel Iblis's face, wishing the General had glazed over the false wall behind him when he'd turned off the sound. The argument back there, particularly the Aishori Senator's wide-armed flailing, was highly distracting, as Bel Iblis probably intended it to be.
Okay,
he said at last.
I get the picture. You need a Star Destroyer to sneak in through their outer defenses. Last I heard, the New Republic still had some captured ones. Why not use one of those?
Two reasons, Bel Iblis said. First, they're all too well known. Disguising their markings and engine ID signatures would take too long.
And probably not fool anyone for long, Mirax murmured.
Booster glared at her.
Whose side was she on here, anyway?
Right,
Bel Iblis nodded.
Second, more importantly, we can't pull any of them away from their assigned patrol duties without everyone in the sector instantly missing them. You know what an information raid is like. If the target gets even a whiff of your plans, you're sunk.
Booster crossed his arms across his chest.
Sorry, General. I sympathize with your problem and all, but no deal. I went through too much for that ship to risk it in some crazy scheme that's none of my business anyway.
Bel Iblis cocked his head slightly to the side.
You sure about it being none of your business?
Booster uncrossed his arms far enough to tap at his upper chest.
You see a New Republic military insignia here?
You see the Diamolan senator back there?
Bel Iblis countered.
They're allies with the Mon Cals on this Bothan situation. And you know how much the Mon Cals hate smugglers. If all-out war breaks out, one of the first things they're likely to do is move against all smuggling groups they can find. And if for no other reason than to drain the potential pool of privateers the other side can use.
He lifted an eyebrow.
And with an Imperial Star Destroyer in your possession, where do you think you'll end up on their list of things to do?
Booster grimaced.
Somewhere near the top.
That's where I'd put you,
Bel Iblis agreed.
So helping me is very much in your own best interests.
He had a case, Booster had to admit, and he could feel the accusation behind Mirax's eyes as she gazed at him, reminding him of his glib comment not 5 minutes ago about how there was nothing they could do. And it occurred to him, as it might not yet have to his daughter, that if Bel Iblis was going to Yaga Minor, Mirax's husband, Corin, and the rest of Rogue Squadron would probably be going in with him. But to be asked to risk his beloved errant venture this way was just too much. Yes, it was falling apart, with half its systems questionable or totally dead, and with an operating cost that would make an Imperial Baron blanch. But it was his. All his. He paused. What in the world was he thinking of? He uncrossed his arms and resettled himself in his seat, eyeing Bel Iblis speculatively.
"Unfortunately, even if I said yes, you'd never get away with it,"
he pointed out.
"You turn a halfway decent sensor array on the errant venture, and a blind Wampa could tell we're not up to Imperial standards anymore. We'd need turbo laser and tractor emplacement upgrades, shield rebuilds, whole system replacements. You name it, we need it."
Bel Iblis's gaze had hardened noticeably during the recitation.
"I see,"
he said dryly.
"Aaron Kraken warned me about you."
"Glad to hear he remembers me,"
Booster shrugged.
"It's up to you, General. I'll lend you the ship, but in exchange you have to upgrade the systems. And win or lose, those upgrades stay put when it's all over."
"The Mon Cals will love that."
"If war breaks out, the Mon Cals will be the least of my worries,"
Booster said bluntly.
"Every two-bit pirate and smuggling group in the galaxy will be trying to get their hands on the Venture. That's my offer. Take it or leave it."
"I'll take it,"
Bel Iblis said, standing up.
"Where's the ship now?"
"Parked over in the Outer Mrist system,"
Booster told him, standing up as well and trying not to show his surprise. His admittedly spotty experience with New Republic officials was that they needed more cajoling and a lot more bargaining before they finally gave in. And New Republic military officials were even worse.
"Where do you want it delivered?"
"I'll tell you once we're aboard,"
Bel Iblis said. Booster frowned.
"You're coming with us?"
"Along with 200 of my crewers," the general said. "We'll assist you in flying the ship until we pick up a proper crew at the rendezvous point."
"I have a proper crew,"
Booster retorted. He should have known Bel Iblis wouldn't give in this easily.
"For running a mobile smuggler's depot, perhaps,"
Bel Iblis said.
"Not for impersonating an Imperial warship. I'll be bringing a full skeleton complement aboard before we leave the rendezvous point."
Booster drew himself up to his full height.
"Let's get one thing straight right now, General,"
he said stiffly.
"The Errant Venture is my ship. If I don't captain her, she doesn't go anywhere."
Once again, Bel Iblis surprised him.
"Certainly,"
he said calmly.
"I wouldn't have it any other way. I have a shuttle waiting. We'll leave at once."
"Whatever you say,"
Booster said, fighting against the bad feeling that, despite appearances, Bel Iblis had still not given in quite the way it sounded.
"Mirax, you might as well take my shuttle and head back home."
Bel Iblis cleared his throat.
"What?"
Booster demanded suspiciously.
"I'm afraid Mirax will have to come with us,"
Bel Iblis said apologetically.
"It's absolutely vital that we have complete security on this, and that means no one who knows about it can be allowed to wander around loose."
Booster drew himself up again.
"If you think I'm going to let my daughter come on a raid against a ubiquitous base..."
"Oh, no, not at all,"
Bel Iblis hastened to assure him.
"She and her son will stay behind at the rendezvous point with the prep crew."
Once again, Booster had the distinct feeling of having had the blocks knocked out from under him.
"Fine,"
he muttered.
"Well, let's get going. If you're determined to go marching into an Imperial base, you might as well get to it."
"Yes," Bel Iblis said. "And let me thank you once again for your help. Don't worry, it'll all work out fine."
"Yeah,"
Booster grumbled as he took Mirax's arm.
"Sure."
Chapter 17.
With one final truncated lightsaber sweep, the last of the chunks came away from the opening and crashed hollowly to the rocky floor.
"There,"
Luke said, peering into the hole.
"What do you think?"
Mara stepped close to his side and shined her glow rod into the opening.
"Still going to be tight for the droid," she said. "But I think it'll do."
Luke glanced back over his shoulder to the 8 Kwamja hanging from the passageway ceiling.
Yes, it would do.
More importantly, now that Splitter of Stones and Keeper of Promises had returned with the Kwamja hunters Eater of Fire Creepers had promised, they should get moving before they lost any prestige in their guide's eyes.
Or to put it another way,
before they lost so much confidence in Master Walker of Sky that they decided to back out of this trip entirely. They hadn't said much about Builder with Vines' violent death, but they were definitely avoiding the area where their friend had died. And they weren't going out of their way to be nice to Child of Winds, either. If he and Mara didn't get moving, there was likely to be more of the same trouble they'd already had too much of.
"I agree," he said,
returning his lightsaber to his belt and stepping over to the shrunken collection of items that had been his pack before the fire creepers had gotten to it. Aside from the food bars in their metal case, the spare blaster power packs and glow rods, and some of the synth rope, there wasn't much left. The bedrolls, survival tent, med packs, even the detonator casings on the grenades had all been ravaged into useless shreds.
"I guess we just take whatever we can salvage of this stuff."
"That's what I'm doing," Mara said.
She had one of her ration boxes open and was sorting out the bars between the various pockets in her jumpsuit.
"Soldier's first rule, concentrate on the food."
"Understood,"
Luke said, starting to fill his own pockets. R2 rolled unsteadily up to him on the uneven ground, and with a beep of invitation, slid open the hidden compartment in his dome.
"I'm putting what's left of the synth rope in R2,"
Luke called to Mara, stuffing the coil into the compartment.
"In case you need it."
"Fine,"
Mara said.
"I'm ready."
"Me too,"
Luke said, gazing into the darkness.
"You want to stay with the same marching order?"
"You mean with you in front and me behind handling the luggage?"
Mara asked, nodding toward R2. Luke felt his face warming.
I know what you meant,"
Mara said, giving him a wry smile.
"But you're the Jedi, and if there's anything in there with big teeth, you've got the best chance of toasting it before it draws blood. So, after you."
Luke looked up at the waiting Kwamja.
"Sure,"
he said, shifting his glow rod to his left hand and drawing his lightsaber.
"We're ready, Splitter of Stones."
"Follow me,"
the Kwamja said, dropping off the ceiling and fluttering into the darkness. It was quickly evident that their route wasn't so much a passageway as it was a narrow, V-shaped crack in the rock. Within the first 3 steps, Luke was forced to return his lightsaber to his belt and wedge his glow rod into his tunic to free up his hands to help pull himself along. Behind him, he could hear R2's continuous nervous twittering and the occasional muted thunk where Mara bumped him into one of the sidewalls. Each time that happened, he had to fight back the impulse to offer his help. If Mara needed him, she would ask. Probably. Fortunately, the crack was only no more than 3 meters long, with a yellowish wall blocking the far end.
"This is the way inside,"
Splitter of Stone said from a perch at a small gap that broached the yellow wall near the top.
"Beyond this wall is the high tower."
"I'd say we're here,"
Mara commented.
"That wall's definitely artificial."
"Agreed,"
Luke said, wedging himself into a more or less steady position in front of the wall and drawing his lightsaber.
"You and R2 keep back."
The wall was quite thin, and, more importantly, not made of kurtosis oil. 3 quick slices of the green blade, and they had their entrance. Luke dropped through the opening, lightsaber and Jedi senses at the ready. Beyond the wall was a dark, high-ceilinged room, incredibly dusty, that extended out beyond the range of his glow rod beam.
spaced along the walls at two different heights, were elaborately tooled wall sconces that looked like they had once held torches or torch-like lights. Above the sconces, at perhaps a dozen other points around the room, other gaps showed where sections of the yellow wall had crumbled away from the ceiling. Aside from the sconces, there were no other decorations or furnishings.
"It doesn't look like Hijarna,"
Mara muttered from behind him, having her own glow rod around.
"What?"
Luke asked.
"There's a ruined fortress on the planet Hijarna,"
she explained.
"Card sometimes uses it as a meeting place."
"Yes, he said something about that when I saw him on Sajansij,"
Luke said.
"He said if this fortress was like that one, it could probably shrug off any attack he could throw at it."
"Him or the New Republic in general,"
Mara said grimly.
"The Hijarna fortress was made out of some incredibly hard black stone that could eat massed turbo laser fire for breakfast."
She gestured with her glow rod.
"My first look at the high tower from outside the cave mouth reminded me of that one. But the wall material here isn't anything like it."
R2 whistled, his sensor unit extended and rotating back and forth as if searching for something.
"That doesn't necessarily mean anything,"
Luke pointed out, squatting down in front of the droid and peering at the data pad they'd rigged up to serve as translator for his more complicated comments.
"They could have been built by two different groups of the same people."
"Maybe. What's he saying?"
"He says that from the fastenings, he doesn't think the wall sconces were part of the original furnishings,"
Luke said,
"for whatever that's worth."
He straightened up and pointed toward the unseen part of the room.
"He also says there's a very strong power source operating somewhere over there."
"Really?"
Mara said with interest, taking a step in that direction and shining her glow rod into the darkness.
"Let's go take a look."
"No!"
Keeper of Promises said sharply from above Luke.
"Hang on,"
Luke said to Mara, looking up. Keeper of Promises was perched on one of the wall sconces, his wings quivering with agitation.
"What's wrong?"
he asked.
"That way lies destruction,"
the Quam Jha said.
"Others have searched that direction. None have ever returned."
"He says there's danger that way,"
Luke translated for Mara.
"Specifics unknown."
"Except that it eats Quam Jha, I presume,"
Mara said.
"On the other hand, the only way out of here has to be that direction."
"No, there is another way,"
Splitter of Stone said from one of the other sconces.
"Come."
He flew across the wall to their left and settled to a perch in one of the other gaps beneath the ceiling.
Here is the entrance to the hidden passage."
"Really?"
Luke said, feeling his eyes narrow. The Quam Jha hadn't said anything about a hidden passage before.
"And this hidden passage leads into the high tower?"
"Come,"
Splitter of Stone said.
"You will see."
"Hidden passage, huh?"
Mara commented as they crossed the room, R2 rolling along behind them.
"I don't recall that being mentioned before."
"Me neither,"
Luke said.
"It could have been just an oversight."
"Or an awkward but conveniently forgotten fact,"
Mara said darkly. R2 twittered questioningly.
"Awkward because hidden passages usually also have hidden exits,"
Mara said to the droid over her shoulder.
"And unless the Quam Jha have found a way through those exits, they won't know any more about the layout of the high tower than we do."
"How about it, Splitter of Stones?"
Luke asked.
"Have you and your people been inside, or haven't you?"
"We have traveled all through the hidden passage,"
was the somewhat sullen reply.
"There are places where we can see the threateners."
and hear what they are saying.
Let me guess,
Mara said.
They've never actually been in the High Tower, but they're sure they'll be able to find their way around once we get them in.
Basically, Luke said heavily. Apparently, for all their talk, no one's actually been inside the place.
Some of the Quam Quay have been inside.
Child of Wind spoke up.
I know of some who have done so.
Luke frowned at him.
They have? Who? When?
Friends from other nestings have entered from above.
Child of Winds explained.
But they have always been quickly driven out and have seen very little.
Still, that's apparently more than the Quam Ja have done,
Luke said, looking at Splitter of Stones again. The Quam Ja was maintaining a stiff silence, but Luke could tell he was not at all pleased with this revelation.
Have you yourself been inside, Child of Winds?
No,
he said.
Only friends from the nesting nearest here.
What's the debate?
Mara asked.
Child of Wind says some of the younger Quam Quay of the region have poked around inside the upper areas of the High Tower,
Luke said.
But how is it that you're in contact with these others, Child of Winds? I thought Hunter of Winds said matters outside your nesting were of no concern to you.
They are of no concern to adult Quam Quay,
Child of Winds said.
But all children may fly freely wherever they wish.
So adult Quam Quay were territorial, but their children mixed together across nesting boundaries however they wanted. And in the process played the role of informal ambassadors and information gatherers? Possibly. Something to remember if and when the New Republic decided to make official contact with them. Beside him, Mara cleared her throat.
Ahem! Is any of this no doubt fascinating conversation helping us get inside the High Tower?
Not really,
Luke agreed, pushing the glimpse into Quam Quay's social structure aside for now. Stepping to the yellow wall beneath where Splitter of Stones was sitting, he ran an exploring hand across the surface. If there was a hidden door there, it was very well hidden.
You think we should look for a release, or open it the easy way?
Mara's answer was the snap hiss of her lightsaber.
Get out of the way,
she said.
You too, Quam Ja!
Splitter of Stones fluttered hastily to one of the wall sconces. Three quick slashes, and Mara had a man-sized opening cut in the wall. Lightsaber held ready, she jumped into the gap and ducked to her right. Luke was right behind her, ducking to the left. They were in a narrow passageway, no more than a meter and a half across, which, like the room behind them, extended to the right beyond the range of their glow rods. In the other direction, the passageway ended in a wall only a few meters away. And leading up over their heads from that end was a set of stairs.
Over here, Mara,
Luke called quietly over his shoulder as he headed that direction. The stairs were narrow, and like the passageway itself, extended past the range of his glow rod beam. Overhead to the left, he could see just the hint of an angled and rising ceiling. Another flight of steps, he decided, probably connecting with this set at some unseen landing ahead. Rising vertically along the inside edge of the stairway were a series of thick cylinders that ran from below the level of the passageway up into the darkness above.
That's our way up, all right,
Mara said from his side.
Uh-oh.
What? Luke asked, frowning as he stretched out with the force. There was no danger he could detect.
The stairs,
Mara said, her glow rod shining downward on the lowest steps.
Now that looks like Hajarna building material.
Luke frowned down at it.
Any way to tell for sure?
A couple of blaster bolts ought to do it,
she said.
But the noise would probably travel farther than we'd like. Anyway, at the moment, it's irrelevant. We're not launching a full-scale assault on the place.
Right. We're trying to sneak in, Luke agreed. Looks like we'll have to go single file.
I think we're all used to that by now,
Mara said, playing her glow rod up and down the steps.
Reminds me of that secret passageway Palpatine had in the Imperial Palace.
Reminds me of the service shaft in Illic on New Cov, Luke said, remembering that long walk he and Tawn had taken up those stairs to a landing area crawling with Imperials.
You'd think just one of these secret stair builders would have the courtesy to install a turbo lift,
Mara said, shaking her head.
Or at least a droid carrier.
It would be nice, Luke agreed. Well, nothing for it but to start climbing. Let's go.
With the narrow but relatively open area ahead and above them, Luke decided to let Splitter of Stones and his cadre of Quamja take the point, flying up end ahead of them. Luke went next, carrying the droid for a change, leaving Mara and Child of Winds to bring up the rear. Mara had groused a little about that, arguing that she wasn't tired and could handle the droid just fine. But Luke had declared the staircase safe enough for him to take droid duty, and had ignored her complaints. Not that she'd complained too hard or too long. The droid had been getting heavier and heavier lately, and she was just as glad to be rid of the burden for a while.
Any idea what these are?
She asked Luke, running her fingertips across the first of the thick vertical cylinders as she passed it. From this position on the stairs, she could now see to the first landing, and a quick count showed there were 20 of the cylinders rising through the gap.
They don't look like ventilation shafts.
The droid warbled.
R2 says they're power lines, Luke told her. Probably bringing energy to the high tower from the big power source he picked up.
That's one blazing lot of capacity,
Mara said, eyeing the cylinders uneasily.
Are all 20 of them pulling power?
The droid twittered again.
Only 3 are active at the moment, Luke said. But the others are still functioning. Running to weapons or shield generators, maybe?
I was just wondering that myself.
Mara felt her lip twitch.
From near the mouth of the cave, you can see 3 towers rising from the fortress. 3 intact and 1 broken.
Yes, I remember that from the record the Starry Ice brought back, Luke said, his voice and emotions tight. You suggested that the shot that took out that tower might have also gouged out some of the ravine you flew in through. Is Hajarna stone that tough?
I don't know,
Mara said grimly.
But Hajarna stone plus 17 power lines worth of shield generators might do the trick.
Luke whistled softly, shaking his head.
You know, this place is starting to look more and more impregnable by the minute. I don't think I like that.
I'm sure I don't like it,
Mara retorted grimly.
Especially in potentially unfriendly hands. It'd be worse than Mount Tantus.
They reached the landing and the expected switchback and continued on up. For a while, Mara tried to keep track of the stair count, but somewhere in the mid-200s she gave up the exercise as useless. They had passed the 4th landing when she began to detect the alien presence. She kept at the sensation for the next few minutes until she was sure. Then, as they started around the 5th landing, she leaned over and caught Luke's eye.
Luke,
she murmured.
Company.
I know, he murmured back. I've been picking them up for a while now. We must be getting close to the inhabited parts of the high tower.
The sensations seem at all familiar to you?
Very, he assured her. They're the same species as the pilots who tried to shoot me down on my way in.
I've never gotten that close to any of this particular group,
Mara said, a sudden shiver running through her.
But I've definitely felt this sense before.
Luke seemed to brace himself.
Thrawn?
She nodded.
Thrawn.
For a long moment they stood there in silence.
Well, you called it, Mara reminded him. You said that it might be a group of his people in there.
It's starting to look that way, Luke said,
looking up and waving toward him.
Splinter of stones.
There was a rustling of wings, and the Kwamja fluttered to a landing on one of the stairs ahead of Luke.
You said there were places where you could see or hear into the high tower, Luke said. How close are we to the nearest of those?
Splinter of Stones began to speak. Suddenly, tired of this second-class status of hers, Mara reached over and took Luke's hand.
Not too far away.
She heard the Quamjaw's voice echoed through Luke's mind.
Two and a portion more turns.
A portion?
Mara asked, frowning.
The spot must be part way up one of the stairways, Luke said, glancing at the cylinders running alongside them. At least these power lines should help mask our life form readings if anyone's looking. That's convenient.
It also means R2 won't be able to pick up much of anything either,
Mara pointed out.
Not so convenient.
But that will surely not be a problem for you.
Child of Wind spoke up.
You have the Force.
True, Luke agreed.
Some of us more than others, of course,
Mara added, suppressing a grimace. As he had on that trek across Wayland 10 years ago, Luke had been giving her more or less non-stop Jedi instruction during the trip through these caverns. But despite those efforts, she was apparently no closer to hearing this weird, force-driven communication of the Kwamja and Kwam Kwei than she'd been when she first arrived on the planet. And it was starting to bug her. It was starting to really bug her. What did she have to do to break through this invisible barrier to full Jedi powers anyway? She didn't have an answer. Luke might, but she didn't. And there was no way in the galaxy she was going to ask him. Not any time soon, anyway. Disgustedly, she let go of his hand.
Well, come on, she growled. If we're going to do this, let's do it.
Right, Luke said.
If he'd picked up on her sudden sour mood, he didn't comment on it.
Okay, Splitter of Stones, let's go. And warn your people to be especially quiet from this point on.
They resumed their climb. Mara followed along behind Luke, putting one foot in front of the other, strictly on autopilot. Her full attention turned outward as she stretched out to the alien presences growing steadily closer. None seemed to be very close, but from past experience, she knew that with unfamiliar alien minds, apparent distances could be misleading. 2 1/3 flights of stairs later, as promised, they reached Splinter of Stone's observation post.
That's an exit, all right,
Mara muttered, peering into the alcove that opened off to the side of the stairway. Roughly 3 meters wide and 1 deep, it ended in a door-shaped panel made of black stone, equipped with a locking wheel and a pair of hand grip releases. In the center of the panel was a tiny hole through which an equally tiny ray of reddish light shone through.
Looks like it swings outward.
Yes,
Luke murmured back, stepping into the alcove for a closer look.
Interesting, this locking wheel. Why lock it from this side? Maybe it was for the exclusive use of certain high-ranking parties who wanted everyone else kept out,
Mara said, stretching out with the Force. The alien presence was still pervasive, but still muted.
If you want to give it a try, this is probably as good a time as any.
Right.
For a moment, Luke held his face against the door, peering through the peephole. Then, gripping the wheel, he turned it to the left.
Mara winced in anticipation, but the screech of rusted metal she'd expected didn't happen.
In fact, the muted sound struck her as more like pieces of polished stone sliding smoothly against each other. Luke finished turning the wheel, then took hold of the 2 grip releases.
Here we go, he muttered, and squeezed.
Whoever had designed the self-lubrication for the locking wheel had apparently also designed the hinges. Again, with only the faint rumble of stone against stone, the door swung open. Mara was through the opening before the door had finished its swing. Blaster in hand, her senses stretched fully alert. They were at the end of a fairly wide corridor, she saw, that stretched for perhaps 20 meters before opening into an open atrium-like area with a wide central pillar running vertically through it from which pale reddish light was streaming. Spaced along each side of the corridor were 5 recessed doors, each flanked by 2 of the wall sconces that they'd seen in the underground room below. Unlike those, though, the upper sections of these sconces were glowing with a muted white light, the illumination adding to the dimmer red coming from the pillar in the atrium. The corridor's floor and ceiling were covered in an intricate pattern of tiny interlocked tiles, while the walls were a contrasting plain silvery metal. From the entryway behind her came a soft twitter. R2 says the red light is the same spectrum as the sun, Luke said from her side. Either we're near the top, or they're piping the light down here.
I'd guess the latter, Mara said. The decor's a surprise. The Hajarna fortress is nothing but plain black stone. Feel like a little reconnoiter?
Sure, Luke said.
Splitter of stones!
If you or the others know anything about the High Tower you haven't told us, this is the time to do it.
There were more of the Kwamja chirps and almost speech, and abruptly all 8 of them flapped past Mara and headed down the corridor. Reaching the end, they split up and vanished off in different directions.
He said they don't know anything more, Luke told Mara, but that they're eager to learn.
As long as they don't bring the locals down on us,
Mara said, flicking off her glow rod and sliding it away into a pocket.
You'd probably better leave the droid here.
I was planning to, Luke said.
R2, get back in the alcove out of sight and close the door.
Child of Winds, no, you stay here with R2.
There was an obvious complaint from the young Quam Quay.
Not now,
Luke said firmly.
Later, maybe, but not now.
Come on, Mara.
They headed out along the corridor, Child of Wind still fussing behind them.
Looks like a residential area,
Luke commented, nodding toward the doors they were passing.
Yes,
Mara said, frowning at the central pillar they were approaching. As they neared it, she could see that it was shaped like a giant circular stairway, except with a smooth ramp instead of a staircase spiraling around it. And the edge...
Is that ramp moving?
It does look like it,
Luke said, craning his neck.
Like a spiral slideway going up.
They reached the end of the corridor, and Mara eased an eye around the corner. More corridors like the one they were in were visible, spreading out like sunburst rays centered on the open area around the spiral slideway.
Definitely a barracks section,
she said.
I wonder where the down ramp is.
It's on the inside half of the up ramp, Luke said, pointing. See? That inner section is going down?
I see it,
Mara nodded.
Must be tricky getting across the up ramp when you want to get off.
We'll probably get a chance to try it,
Luke said, stepping close to Mara and putting his arm around her shoulder. She frowned at him, opened her mouth to ask what he was doing.
No one!
Keeper of Promises' voice came as the Kwamja fluttered into sight from one of the other corridors.
Some of the other passages end in walls, but most continue on into other such caverns.
Did you see anyone?
Mara asked.
We saw no one,
Keeper of Promises said, in the slightly miffed tone of someone who's been asked a question he's already answered.
Thank you.
Luke tilted his head to look at Mara.
What do you want? Up or down?
Up,
Mara said, easing away from him. It was always a little disconcerting to look at someone whose face was barely 15 centimeters away.
All the command rooms and other interesting stuff at Hejarna were on the upper floors.
Up it is,
Luke said, releasing his grip on her and crossing to the spiral slideway.
Looks clear,
he added, looking cautiously up into the opening as Mara joined him.
You picking up any danger?
No more than I have been for the past 10 minutes,
Mara said.
Sure, let's try it.
Right.
Luke waved at Keeper of Promises.
Come on, Quamsha. We're heading up.
They stepped onto the outer section of the slideway, both of them stumbling slightly as their bodies were forced to catch up with the suddenly moving feet.
It definitely feels like we're getting closer to the aliens,
Luke commented, as the group of Quamsha flapped past on their way to the next level.
I just wish I had a better benchmark for the species.
Yes, it'd be nice to know how close they actually were,
Mara agreed, watching above them as the Quamsha split up again and headed off in all directions.
One of the reinforcements, Flyer Through Spikes, Mara tentatively identified him, reappeared overhead as she and Luke reached the level, jabbering away.
He says they found no one up here either, Luke reported.
Splitter of Stones has suggested...
The flare of her danger sense was Mara's only warning.
Luke!
Down! Luke snapped, igniting his lightsaber. Mara was already dropping to one knee, spinning around as her eyes and blaster searched for a target. A movement just inside one of the corridors caught her eye. She tracked her blaster toward it, and abruptly, the world exploded into a flash of brilliant blue. Instinctively, she ducked away from the bolt, her blaster spitting return fire. Another blue flash changed to green as Luke's lightsaber slashed across it, deflecting the bolt across the room. There was another blue flash, again caught by the lightsaber blade. Mara fired twice, had the satisfaction of seeing the half-hidden gunman duck back.
Behind you! Luke barked. Mara dropped from her kneeling crouch to land flat on her stomach on the ramp, twisting around to face the other direction as she did so. Two burgundy-uniformed gunmen were visible back there, sprinting from the end of one of the corridors toward the protection of something that looked like a small service vehicle. She fired two shots, missed with both. And abruptly, one of the gunmen stopped dead in his tracks, raising his weapon toward her in a two-handed grip. Mara tracked her blaster toward him, a small part of her mind noting the blue skin of his face and hands and the glowing red eyes glaring out at her.
Watch out! But the warning came too late. Even as Mara fired again and then twisted around to search out the new threat, there was another flash of blue, and a lance of agony jabbed into her right shoulder. She might have gasped in pain. She wouldn't remember later whether she had or not. But suddenly, Luke was crouching on the slideway beside her, his surge of fear dimly sensed through the waves of pain hammering at her. His hand briefly probed the area of the wound, and she could feel the pain ease somewhat as the force flowed from him into her.
What do you think?
She managed through clenched teeth.
We seen enough for this pass?
Sounds good to me, he said, his lightsaber humming angrily as he swatted more of the blue blasts.
Then...
She blinked in surprise. Above her was the edge of one of the fortress floors, but it was pulling up and away from her. Even now, she could see, they were coming down to the level they'd started from.
How'd we get to the down part of the slideway?
She asked.
You rolled onto it when you were hit,
he told her, shifting his hand from her neck to a supporting grip cradling her shoulders.
Don't you remember?
She shook her head. The movement sent a fresh surge of agony through her shoulder. Combat reflex, I guess. Wait, my blaster!
It's all right. Keeper of Promises picked it up,
Luke assured her, shutting down his lightsaber. He half rose from his crouch, and she could feel herself also rising in the eerily intangible grip of the Force.
Here we go.
The level they'd come in on was starting to move past them now. Stretching out to the Force, carrying Mara with him, Luke leaped over the up section of the slideway to land on the solid floor beyond.
cradling her in both arms, he hurried down the corridor toward their hidden door.
"Look, I can walk on my own,"
Mara growled, glancing back over Luke's shoulder as he ran. Some of the Kwamja were visible coming up behind them, but so far there was no sign of other pursuit.
"You don't have to carry me."
"Don't argue,"
Luke bit out, his mind frothing with concern and worry.
"I just hope R2 didn't lock the door." "Ah!"
Ahead, the door was swinging ponderously open toward them, pushed by an obviously straining child of winds. Trying to work past her pain, Mara stretched out to the door with the force, giving him as much assistance as she could manage. The droid, rolling forward to help, squawked in surprise and hastily backed up just in time as Luke and Mara charged in, followed by four of the Kwamja.
"Seal the door!"
Mara heard Splitter of Stones' order through Luke's mind as the Kwamja flapped madly to a halt.
"What about the others?"
Luke asked as two of the Kwamja landed on the hand grips and began tugging.
"They have gone into other passages,"
Splitter of Stones said.
"They will try to lead the threateners away from this area."
"We can hope,"
Luke said as the door swung back into place.
"Seal the door. I'm going to take Mara down to that last landing."
"No! Go up!"
Mara said, digging out her glow rod with her left hand as Luke started down the stairs.
"If they find the door, they'll probably assume we went down."
"Makes sense," Luke agreed, turning and heading up.
"R2, you make sure they get it sealed and then stand guard."
A minute later, they'd reached the landing.
"I wish we still had our bedrolls,"
Luke said as he laid her carefully down on the cold stone and took the glow rod from her.
"How does it feel?"
"Like someone's roasting an Ewok in there,"
Mara told him.
"Not as bad as it was, though. Is that a pain suppression trick you're using on me?"
"For what it's worth,"
Luke said, sticking the glow rod between his teeth and stripping off his jacket.
"It's not nearly as effective on someone else as it is on yourself,"
he added, talking around the glow rod as he bunched the jacket and slid it under her head as a pillow.
"I knew there was something else I should have stuck around the academy long enough to learn,"
she said, hissing between her teeth as Luke set the glow rod down on her chest and began carefully pulling the burned edges of cloth away from the wound.
"I don't suppose you offer a crash course?"
"I usually like to ease into that lesson a little more gradually."
Luke's lip twitched.
"Ouch."
Mara looked down at her shoulder and immediately wished she hadn't.
"Ouch doesn't even begin to cover it,"
she told him, feeling a little sick as she resolutely turned her eyes away. The burn was a lot nastier than she'd guessed.
"I think I've just decided I'm going to miss the med pack more than I am the bedrolls."
"Don't give up just yet,"
Luke soothed. His fingers were stroking the skin of her shoulder and neck, and as they did so, the pain again decreased.
"I know a couple more tricks."
"That feels good,"
Mara said, closing her eyes.
"I'm putting you into a healing trance,"
Luke explained, his voice sounding oddly distant.
"It can be a little slow, but sometimes it's as effective as a Bacta tank."
"I hope this is one of those times,"
Mara murmured.
Suddenly, she was feeling very tired.
"Yet another wonderful Jedi trick you'll have to teach me sometime. Night, Luke. Don't forget to wake me if the bad guys crash the party."
"Good night, Mara,"
Luke said softly. Softly and uselessly, she was already sound asleep.
"Is she going to die?"
An anxious voice asked from beside him. Engrossed in Mara's injury and the setting up of the healing trance, he hadn't noticed Child of Wind's arrival. Some Master Jedi.
"No, she'll be all right," he said. "The wound isn't dangerous,
and I have some healing abilities. Child of Wind sidled a little closer, peering with unblinking eyes at the woman stretched out at Luke's side.
Was it my fault, Jedi Skywalker?
He asked at last.
Did I not open the door quickly enough?
No, not at all, Luke assured him. It had absolutely nothing to do with you.
Then it was the Quan Zha who failed you.
Luke frowned at the young Quam Quay. Given the annoyingly persistent rivalry between the two groups, he would have expected a note of condemnation, or at least lofty superiority in Child of Winds' judgment. But there was nothing there but regret and sadness. Perhaps, Luke said. But it may not really be their fault either. The Threateners may have detected our arrival and put together an ambush. And don't forget that cave dwellers like the Quam Zha probably don't see as well in lighted rooms as you or I would. Child of Wind seemed to consider that.
If the Threateners laid a snare, they may enter this place to search for you.
They might, Luke agreed. If they even know about it, of course. They might not. All the dust in here would indicate it hasn't been used for quite a while.
Still, they may know, even if they do not use.
Child of Winds reminded him.
Your friend Machine and the Quam Zha watch and wait below. Should not someone also watch and wait above?
That's a good idea, Luke agreed. Go tell Splitter of Stones I want him to send two of his hunters to stand watch at the next stairway exit above us.
I will obey,
the Quam Quay said, stretching out his wings.
But he will need send only one hunter. I will go myself to watch with him.
Luke opened his mouth to object, closed it again. Child of Winds had been chafing under the casual contempt of the Quam Zha ever since they reached the cave. This was something useful he could do that probably wouldn't be too dangerous. All right, Child of Winds. Thank you.
There are no thanks needed,
Child of Winds said.
It is only what is right for me to do for the Jedi Skywalker.
He cocked his head for one final look at Mara.
And for his beloved companion.
Spreading his wings, he flapped away into the darkness of the stairway, leaving that last comment echoing uncomfortably in Luke's mind. Beloved companion. Companion. Beloved. He looked down at Mara. Her familiar features thrown into starkly contrasting areas of light and shadow by the beam of the glow rod. Beloved. No, he murmured to himself. No. He liked Mara, certainly. Liked her very much. She was smart and resourceful, with a mental and emotional toughness he could rely on, plus a sharp humor and irreverence that made for a refreshing contrast with the automatic and unthinking awe too many people held him in these days. She'd been a trusted ally through some very hard and dangerous times, sticking with him and Han and Leia, even when the rest of a hostile New Republic hierarchy had declared her untrustworthy. And perhaps most important of all, she was strong and capable in the Force, with the ability to share his thoughts and emotions in a way that even a couple as close as Han and Leia couldn't experience. But he wouldn't love her. He couldn't take that risk. Every time in the past that he had allowed himself the luxury of caring that deeply about a woman, something terrible had happened to her. Gariel had been killed. Callista had lost her Jedi abilities and finally left him. The list of tragedies sometimes seemed endless. Still, if Mara's theory was right, all of those disasters had happened while he was still under the lingering effects of his brush with the dark side. Would things be different now? Could they be different? He shook his head firmly. No, He could try all the logic in the world. Could come up with reason after reason why he could perhaps allow himself to have feelings like that again. But not now. Not with Mara. Because hanging like